Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section 1. This is Wednesday, January 22, 2020. County OKs $1 million for City Animal Shelter by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Commissioners on Tuesday approved providing the City of Midland with $1 million in funding to go toward construction of the city's new animal shelter. Tina Hawes, Director of Community Services for the City, said in a letter to County Judge Terry Johnson and obtained by the Reporter Telegram that the funds from the county would offset the expense the city is incurring. The Midland City Council approved $8.9 million for the project in December, which Hawes said is the total cost of the project. The city has a good partnership with the county to provide or assist with a number of services, including accepting owner-surrendered animals, animal-related arrest cases, aggressive or injured animals, bite cases, quarantine animals involving bite cases, processing rabies specimens for testing, and deceased animal disposal, was said in the letter. County commissioners said at the Tuesday meeting they were enthusiastically on board with building the new animal shelter. Anything we can do to get the pet population under control in Midland, we definitely want to be working with you guys in the city and any other organizations whose goal is the same, Commissioner Luis Sanchez said during the meeting. The new animal shelter will be constructed on Fairgrounds Road behind the existing animal shelter, which will later be demolished. In a memorandum of understanding between the county and city, the commissioners said they believed it would be in the public interest and serve a public purpose to provide funding to the city. One stipulation of the agreement between the two entities is that the funding can only be used for construction of the animal shelter, according to the memorandum. Additionally, the facility must accept animals from the unincorporated areas of Midland County. The agreement states that the $1 million from the county is based on anticipated construction costs of $8.9 million. If the total construction costs are less than that amount, the county has the option to ask the city to return a proportional amount, according to the agreement. The city must also notify the county when the funds have been used and provided documentation verifying they were used for construction purposes, the memorandum states. The new facility is planned to be 18,400 square feet, more than double the size of the current 7,200 square foot facility. It's expected to be able to accommodate 80 cats and 113 dogs. Education. Founding MC trustee retires after almost 50 years. Board votes to bestow Kenneth Peeler with emeritus title by Brandy Edison. The only founding member still on the Midland College Board of Trustees has resigned after serving more than 47 years since before the community college began holding classes on campus in 1975. Kenneth Peeler helped the college transition from educating college students at Lee High School classrooms for its first 6 years of existence to becoming a well-respected junior college that offers baccalaureate degrees and partners with universities across the state, including Texas A&M University System and Texas Tech University. The campus has also grown to include an early college high school and pre-kindergarten charter academy. The long-serving trustee wrote in his resignation letter submitted December 16th that serving as a founding member of the board has been one of the greatest honors of his life. The time has come for me to step aside and allow another community leader to take my place, Peeler wrote. I am humbled by the generosity and support the college receives from the citizens of Midland, and I look forward to watching as both Midland College and the community it serves continue to flourish into the future. It is with deep gratitude and appreciation for each of you that I submit this letter, knowing full well that the good work we did together will continue and that Midland College will always be a shining star in our community. Trustees Larry Lawrence and Steve Kaiser reluctantly accepted Peeler's resignation during Tuesday's board meeting. Midland College President Steve Thomas said, "There has never been a founding member retire from the board. This is really a historical agenda item, Thomas said. Since joining the board in 1972, just 3 years after the college was founded, Peeler has stood alongside four presidents and has assisted in making the decisions to implement several new degree programs and construct and renovate many facilities. The more recent include the newly renovated softball fields, which were completed this month, and the facilities that are currently under construction or being renovated, including the Cowden Dining Hall, Engineering Lab, ATC Health Sciences Labs, and Murray Faskin Learning Resource Center. Through his efforts with the college, Peeler's late wife, Laveau, discovered the same love for the college. She was the one who suggested Pepe Pisano as the name of MC's Chaparral mascot. In her memory, Peeler created the Laveau B. and Kenneth A. Peeler ECHS at MC Endowed Scholarship. Because of his tenure, MC Board President Linda Cowden discussed Tuesday giving Peeler an emeritus title. He would be able to attend as an honorary board member, but would not be able to vote on any items. The board unanimously voted in favor and agreed he deserved it for his hard work through the years. Cowden said Peeler likely has attended about 450 board meetings during his time as a trustee. That's a lot of service, Trustee Paul Morris said. Education. MISD posts new chief of staff position by Brandy Addison. Midland ISD has posted a position for a chief of staff. District officials said the chief of staff will serve as a liaison between Superintendent Orlando Riddick and district administrators. The salary for the position is $113,820 to $133,849 annually. The position was last held around 2010, according to the MISD Communications Department. I think liaison is a fair characterization, MISD Chief Communications Officer Elena Ladd said in an email. The position would coordinate not just between the superintendent and chiefs, chief academic officer, chief transportation officer, chief financial officer, chief operations officer, chief of human capital management, and chief communications officer, but also between different departments, especially helping to lead projects that are interdepartmental in nature. Requirements include having a master's degree from an accredited college or university and that preferred candidates have a valid mid-management or principal certification. A candidate must also have 5 years of successful administrative experience in education or an equivalent amount of leadership experience in the private sector. The position's function and purpose, published on the website, reads as written below: successfully execute and coordinate broad general administrative and staff support activities of the district, provide counsel and assistance to other executive staff members and other divisions of the district, actualize the goals of the Board of Trustees and the Superintendent of Schools through district-wide planning, direction, program initiatives, and benchmarking and continuous improvement, provide support and direction to the district's operations, performance management, communication, and parent and student involvement groups. Responsibilities include directing and coordinating the core functions of board services, intergovernmental relations, emergency management office, athletics, police, security services, food and child nutrition services, and technology services, providing expertise to the superintendent of the development and the publication of reports related to the district goals and objectives, and to maintain the records and reports as necessary to keep the Board of Trustees informed of the district's progress and future plans. Developing an integrated communications network within the district and the community, making recommendations about the implementations of goals and objectives, consulting and coordinating with the Executive Director of Accountability and Student Data to increase educational success through program evaluation results, observing reliable student data, delivering locally developed and STAND-mandated assessments, and providing training to school administrators, the school board, and the community. Consulting with the Executive Director of Student Services in support of student success and achievement by analyzing trends of MISD student demographics and regional demographics to determine school attendance zones and feeder patterns. Consulting with the General Counsel. Consulting with the Operations and Construction Services Program to provide quality, sustainable facilities and implement a bond program. Consulting and coordinating with communication services to assist in preparing press releases, photos, and articles for local media, designing and editing district publications, including newsletters, brochures, programs for special events, and designing the district's website. Consulting with the Executive Director of Athletics to support successful athletic programs. State briefs from Wire Reports, San Antonio. Man arrested in bar shooting argues self-defense. A 19-year-old man arrested in a San Antonio shooting that left two people dead and wounded five others said he was acting in self-defense when he opened fire during a concert at a bar. Kiernan Christopher Williams is expected to face capital murder charges for the Sunday night shooting at Ventura on the Museum Reach portion of the San Antonio Riverwalk, police said Monday. As Williams was taken into custody Monday, he promoted his own Instagram account and described himself as an upcoming artist. He told reporters that another person threatened to kill him because Williams had bumped into him in the bar. "I regret everything that I did, no lie," Williams said. Court records do not list an attorney who could speak on Williams' behalf. In 2017, a judge found Williams guilty on one charge of assaulting a public servant, and he was later repeatedly jailed for probation violations, Bexar County court records show. The medical examiner's office identified the men killed as Robert Martinez and Alejandro Robles, police said. A 46-year-old woman and four male teens between the ages of 16 and 19 were hurt, but they were expected to survive their injuries, police said. Police have said the shooting was not a random incident and that at least one of the seven victims knew Williams. "It's nothing more complicated than an argument that occurred inside the club with someone pulling out a firearm," San Antonio Police Chief William McManus said Sunday night. Robles, who was killed in the shooting, had gone to Ventura with his wife to support a childhood friend who was performing that night, family members told the San Antonio Express News. His father, James Huff, said he did not believe he knew Williams. A since-deleted Facebook event indicated Sunday night's concert at the Ventura was a living dream, a showcase featuring multiple performers, and that a flyer listed Williams as one of the scheduled performers. An email to the apparent promoters wasn't immediately returned. Denton. Police fatally shoot man carrying a frying pan and cleaver. A police officer in North Texas fatally shot a man at an apartment complex early Tuesday after the man refused to drop a frying pan and cleaver that he was holding, officials said. One officer was stabbed in the melee, but officials said the injuries aren't life-threatening. The officers responded just before 3 a.m. to an apartment complex in Denton, about 35 miles north of Dallas, after several people called 911 to report a man was banging on doors and shattering light fixtures in a hallway of the complex, Denton city officials said in a press release. Police used a taser on the man, but it was ineffective. So an officer opened fire, striking the man, the press release said. The man was pronounced dead at the hospital. Officials have not released the names of the officers involved or the man who was killed, but the city said the officer who shot the man had 6 years of service with the Denton Police Department.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. Section B, Health and Wellness. Lifestyle Medicine Center offers Diabetes Reversal Program by Dr. Padmaja Patel, Medical Director of the Lifestyle Medicine Center. In my 20 years of clinical practice, I have never been so excited to talk about a new approach in treating chronic and progressive diseases. We were taught in our medical training that type 2 diabetes is a life sentence and that for the most part it cannot be cured. It can only be managed with medications. Despite major advances in technology and a variety of pharmaceutical options in managing diabetes, the disease remains a major public health epidemic. At present, we have more than 50 different combinations of oral medications and more than 15 different types of insulin options available. Despite that, prevalence of diabetes has been rising. Now, that should make us wonder if we are missing something. Each year, during National Diabetes Month, communities across the country bring attention to the disease. Last year's focus was on the link between diabetes and heart disease, informing communities on the message that adults with diabetes are nearly twice as likely to die from heart disease or stroke as people without diabetes. Unfortunately, fear is not a good motivator to change behavior, and this message is not likely to have much impact. The ultimate goal of diabetes management has been to prevent long-term complications. I know from my own experience of referring patients to a dietitian for nutritional counseling based on ADA guidelines, it has failed to show a sustainable impact in diabetes management. The reality is that the focus on counting carbs has not been an effective strategy. Invariably, additional medications are required every 1 or 2 years to better manage rising blood sugars. Unfortunately, approximately 50% of patients will need insulin therapy within 10 years of diagnosis with our current therapeutic approach for diabetes management. Instead of focusing on preventing complications in diabetes management, what if we addressed the root cause of type 2 diabetes to reverse the disease? Yes, I am talking about the reversal of diabetes, an evidence-based scientific approach where through lifestyle changes you can achieve a complete remission or rely less on prescription medications. A significant number of studies indicate that diabetes is reversible through bariatric surgeries, low-calorie diets, or low-carb diets, but these approaches are associated with surgical complications and significant treatment costs, and for the most part, are hard to maintain on a long-term basis. The root cause of type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance, which means insulin that you already have in your body is no longer working. The Western diet, high in fat and calories, causes fat deposition inside muscle and liver cells, which in turn blocks the effects of insulin, causing insulin resistance. In the book, Dr. Neil Barnard's Program for Reversing Diabetes, Barnard offers a scientifically proven approach to preventing, controlling, and reversing diabetes by a powerful nutritional plan. In this plan, there is no need to cut calories, limit carbohydrates, or stick to small portions. You can eat until you are full. In a National Institute of Health-funded study, Barnard demonstrated that compared to the standard American diabetic diet, a low-fat vegan diet was 3 times more effective in controlling blood sugars. In the New York Times bestseller, How Not to Die, Dr. Michael Greger quotes a study showing that not all fats affect our muscle cells in the same way. For example, palmitate, the kind of saturated fat found in meat, dairy, and eggs, causes insulin resistance. On the other hand, oleate, the monounsaturated fat found mostly in nuts, olives, and avocados, may actually protect against the detrimental effects of saturated fat. About 100 years ago, a single serving of chicken may have contained only 16 fat calories. Nowadays, one serving of chicken may have more than 200 calories of fat, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture. It is becoming increasingly obvious that animal fat in our diet is contributing to insulin resistance. Plant-based diets work by improving insulin sensitivity, whereas the standard diabetic diet does not change insulin sensitivity, but rather compensates for the problem by limiting sugars. A plant-based diet promotes healthy weight loss, lowers cholesterol, and thereby reduces the risk of the number one killer of diabetics, heart disease. It also helps in reversing some of the common chronic complication of diabetes, such as neuropathy and retinopathy. Gregor cites a study that was done 35 years ago in which type 2 diabetics were placed on a plant-based diet for an average of 16 days when they saw their insulin requirements cut by 60%, and half of the diabetics were able to come off insulin altogether just by eating a healthy diet. That's the power of plants. In the last 3 years, I have seen some amazing transformations in diabetes management by focusing on lifestyle factors and behaviors. To my surprise, these results have been better than the standard diabetes treatment that I have been offering over all these years. Also, once you remove the burden of counting carbs and calories from your daily routine, it becomes a joyous journey of feeling empowered by education, support, and a sense of well-being. My patient outcomes have fueled my passion to make this program available to everyone in our area who has type 2 diabetes. Their remarkable results have forced me to look at this old disease in a new light. For this reason, we are offering this unique program at the Lifestyle Medicine Center in a group visit setup. It will be an intensive therapeutic lifestyle intervention program delivered by a healthcare team consisting of a physician, registered dietitian, health coach, and stress management expert. The chances of success with this new lifestyle increase with support. Therefore, you have the option to enroll a spouse or caregiver into the program with you for a nominal price. Our first cohort is scheduled to begin February 6th. The best part is you do not have to change your primary care provider or your endocrinologist to participate in this program, and these medical services will be billed to your insurance. For more information on the Lifestyle Medicine Center's Diabetes Reversal Program, call 432-221-5433. Serving the community. Director says, love of the volunteers makes auxiliary special. Organization is close to $5 million in donations to hospital. By Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital's volunteer auxiliary has been serving the community for 70 years, with members logging a total of 1.5 million hours in volunteer work and $4.7 million raised for hospital equipment. Kimberly Modisette, director of volunteers at MMH, said the program was established in 1950 with 86 charter members. She said it was made up of a group of people from the community who came together knowing they wanted to serve the hospital. The auxiliary department hosted a fundraiser until 1968 called The Follies, a slapstick comedy that Modisette said was the precursor to Summer Mummers. The first gift auxiliary volunteers donated was $3,200 in furniture for the lobby of the hospital, she said. After 70 years, Modisette said, what makes the auxiliary so special is the love of the volunteers who give their time unselfishly to help our hospital. Auxiliary members work in the gift shop, at the information desk giving directions and providing room numbers to visitors, and stay with family members in the surgery waiting room, she said. Their time is just so valuable to us. You can't buy that, Modisette said. You can't buy a volunteer sitting and holding somebody's hand while their family member is in surgery or they get bad news. Modisette said, the auxiliary is trying this year to hit the $5 million mark for equipment donated to the hospital. Their last donation was for $250,000 in August that purchased labor and delivery beds, fetal monitors, and a new front door, she said. Some notable previous donations were two ambulances, a heart-lung machine, and a public health library. There are currently 97 adult volunteers in the program who range in age from their 50s to 90s, who work 1 4-hour shift a week, Modisette said. There also are 50 to 60 junior volunteers, 14 to 17, who either want to become nurses or doctors or are homeschooled students and need volunteer hours, she said. Anne Klein has volunteered with the Auxiliary for 35 years and served 2 terms as president. "It's my passion," she said. "I love it. I know what the hospital is and what they do." Klein said she began volunteering in 1985 after having a procedure done at the hospital. She said there was a candy striper helping her during her hospital stay, and that inspired her to begin volunteering. She said she loves the time she spends at the hospital giving back to the community. "That's what the Auxiliary is, helping others and the patients, especially family members who are grieving," Klein said. "There's a lot more to being a volunteer for the hospital than you think." Parents Should Embrace Being Out of Touch with Their Kids, by Mark McQueen, Clinical Director of Centers. I knew this day would come as a parent. My teenager has determined I am out of touch, old-fashioned, lame. He doesn't understand why Little River Band makes my playlist. He cannot fathom why I consider Three Amigos or Princess Bride cinematic masterpieces. And he is dumbfounded as to why I still consider my 30-year-old sweatshirt from college to be stylish. And yes, I wear it proudly. Of course, some of this seems to be an intrinsic dance that children and parents do. "You must act like I am lame, even if you find my quirks endearing. In turn, I purposely highlight and exaggerate those parts of me you find out of touch. Although I really do enjoy listening to Little River Band, especially when he is in the car, all of this brings up a truth about all relationships. Being perceived as lame can be unappealing. It can change the way I parent. If I am not healthy emotionally and spiritually, my aim in parenting can shift to being perceived as socially relevant or well-liked. The wisdom I have to share and the good direction I can provide take a back seat to being liked. The reality is, you won't find a quality parenting curriculum or resource out there that does not remind the parent that being your child's best friend is not the goal. A hierarchy in the parent-child dynamic is essential and healthy. I love the commercials that have started airing recently. One shows a mom making an effort to talk with her young daughter about underage drinking before she attends a slumber party. Another shows a father attempting to talk with his kids at the dinner table about the possible temptation of abusing or experimenting with prescription medication in the home. Things end well in these commercials, and the children's resistance to the conversation magically transforms to receptiveness in about 30 seconds. I know difficult conversations like these rarely, if ever, resolve so quickly. And there seems to be a never-ending list of topics that must be addressed with our kids. Things such as sexuality, spirituality, substance use, healthy boundaries in dating, how much or how little to include technology or social media in their life, the pitfalls of relationships that primarily take place through a social media platform, the development of real self-esteem, body image, and setting limits for movies, music, and friends that ultimately are not good for us. What is observed too often in a counseling setting is a tendency for the family to avoid these topics altogether. This is not usually because the parents don't think the topics are important or that they don't have wisdom to share. Outside of general discomfort, the most common barrier is a parent's fear of being seen as old-fashioned, out of touch, and unable to relate to their child's generation. And once we're seen as out of touch, we fear our teenager's response will be to talk to us less than they already do. So the encouragement to parents is to embrace being out of touch. The reality is that culture, technology, and social norms will always be evolving, but the basics of relationships, good decision-making, and good character development stay fairly constant. You don't have to be in touch to speak to these. Guest View. 988 emergency number would provide stronger suicide lifeline. From the Chicago Tribune. Extreme stress scrambles the brain, but it's second nature to dial 911 to summon help in a crisis. Now a welcome sequel is coming, one that should allow mental health crises to be addressed more adeptly. Pending federal legislation would establish 988 as the number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is currently 800-273-TALK or 800-273-8255, the Tribune's Kate Thayer reports. The proposal to establish the number, currently in a period of public comment, has bipartisan support. Anyone considering suicide should know that mental health disorders can be treated, and that hotline is available 24/7 at the existing 9-digit number. The 988 emergency number is not yet in use. Suicide has been on an alarming rise. In 2017, more than 47,000 people in the United States died by suicide, and 1.4 million attempted it. From 1999 to 2016, suicide increased in 49 of the 50 states. While other types of gun violence grab headlines, by far the most gun deaths are suicides, a full 2/3. Suicide impacts all communities. It has increased among boys and girls ages 10 to 17. Recently, the Tribune just told the story of a seventh-grade boy in Chicago who died this way. 6 Chicago police officers died by suicide in an 8-month period in 2018-19. The toll is even higher in many at-risk communities. More than 20 veterans die by suicide every day, and more than 500,000 LGBTQ youth will attempt suicide this year alone, said FCC Chairman Ajit Pai. A shorter, simpler suicide hotline number could be a game changer. Advocates say creating a simple 3-digit dedicated number will allow mental health to command the same urgency as physical crises. They expect other benefits too, including potential savings in offering an alternative to the dispatch of first responders. With no choice but to call 911, a police officer and ambulance shows up at their door. If that's how our society treats mental health emergencies, people aren't as likely to report, said John Draper, executive director of the National Suicide Lifeline. The proposed 988 number would not only give them the right care, but it won't give them the wrong care. When dialing 988, callers would speak to trained counselors who would evaluate whether the person needed emergency care or referral to other resources, as well as whether follow-up contact is warranted. People could also call 988 with concerns about friends or family members. If the number is widely marketed and works as it should, there will be many more calls for mental health services. That's both the good news and the next challenge. Calls to the Lifeline could double from 2.2 million in 2018, according to experts. As with 911, phone bill fees will provide extra dollars for staff and training. Crisis centers, aided by state and local governments and grants from nonprofits, must make sure there are plenty of trained staff waiting on the other end of the line. Obituaries for Wednesday, January 22nd. Barbara C. McWilliams McCulloch. Friday, January 17th. Barbara C. McWilliams McCulloch passed away at age 83 in Midland. A funeral service will be held Friday, January 24th by Pastor Kurt at First United Methodist Church in Midland at 2 o'clock. Final resting place will be Sunset Lawn Cemetery in El Dorado, Kansas. Barbara was born October 5th, 1936, in El Dorado, Kansas, to Moses McWilliams and Hattie L. Hedworth McWilliams Hardy. She was the youngest of 5 children. She is survived by her children, Larry McCulloch of Fort Worth and Christina McCulloch of Midland, 3 grandsons, 2 granddaughters, as well as 6 great-grandchildren. Barbara is preceded in death by her parents, all her siblings, and her oldest son, Jeffrey L. Kimball. Memorial donations may be made to Meals on Wheels in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Domingo Villa Holguin. Domingo Villa Holguin, 71, of Midland, passed away January 20th at Laman Lusk Sanchez Veterans Home. He was born to the late Desideria V. Holguin and David P. Holguin in Marfa, February 18, 1948. He married Faye Salgado in 1969, and they were married for 39 years before her death in 2008. He was preceded in death by his wife, Faye Salgado Holguin, parents David P. and Desideria V. Holguin, brothers Jose Holguin, Arturo Holguin, Mingo Holguin, Lencho Holguin, David Holguin, Angel Holguin, Ernesto Holguin, and sisters Anita Holguin, Maguey Pais, Beatrice Fuentes, and one grandson. He is survived by Gina Reyes and her husband Max of Midland, David Holguin and his wife Elizabeth Galindo of Cibolo, Amanda Lopez and husband Isaac of San Angelo, four grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, brothers Manuel Holguin and Henry Holguin, sisters Alidia Holguin, Yolanda Ramirez, and Carolina Holguin, and many nieces and nephews. Rosary will be held Wednesday at 7 p.m. Celebration Mass is set for Thursday, January 23rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net or online at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Mildred L. Holloman. Mildred L. Holloman, 92, of Midland, passed away January 18th. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 24th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 9:30 a.m. Saturday, January 25th, at Cotton Flat Baptist Church, with interment to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. All floral offerings may be delivered to Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Refugio Miranda Chavira II. Refugio Miranda Chavira II, 34, of Odessa, passed away Saturday, January 18th. Visitation will be held Wednesday, January 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held Thursday, January 23rd at 12 p.m. at Crossroads Church in Odessa. Health Briefs. UTPB partners with UT Health to expand MBA opportunities. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin recently announced a partnership with the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston School of Public Health. The two UT system universities will offer students the opportunity to simultaneously earn a graduate certificate in public health and a Master of Business Administration. This degree program will meet the needs of those looking for management-level positions in public health, healthcare organization, and hospital administration, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said. Students who graduate under this program will earn their MBA from UTPB and the graduate certificate from UT Health School of Public Health. For more information, visit www.utpb.edu/MBA/UT Health. CDC reports U.S. birth rate drops to all-time low. From the Washington Post. Women in the United States are having fewer babies than ever before, creating a fertility rate of 1.73 births per mother, according to data from the National Vital Statistics System that was analyzed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. The fertility rate peaked in 1957 at 3.77 births per woman, declined to 1.84 births in 1980, increased slightly to 2.08 by 1990, and started declining again in 2007, reaching the record low by the end of 2018. The 1.73 number is below what is considered the replacement rate, producing as many births each year as deaths. That requires a fertility rate of 2.1 births per woman, according to the CDC. The agency's report did not address reasons the fertility rate has fallen, but other data in the report showed that women are having children later in life with fewer births than in the past from the teen years to early 30s, and more births than in the past from ages 35 to 44. The age at which women first became mothers also has increased. Today, U.S. women are on average 26.4 years old when they have their first child, according to a Pew Research Center study based on international data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Midland Health Events. Lifestyle Medicine Center class, Food Addiction, Why We Can't Stop Eating, 6 p.m. Thursday at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus, phone 221-5433, $5 fee. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. Breastfeeding Class, 6 p.m. Tuesday at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus, contact Amber Cunningham at 221-3283, or childbirth education at midland.org, $10 fee. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. New class, Having a C-Section, 6 p.m. January 30th. Contact Amber Cunningham at 221-3283 or childbirth education at midlandhealth.org, $10 fee. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. COM Aquatics. COM Aquatics 3003 North A offers paddleboard classes at 7:15 p.m. Mondays. Boards do not have to be reserved. Finding a doctor. Access to a primary care provider is one mission of Midland Health. Residents who need help finding a physician or setting up an appointment can call 221-DOCS. That's 221-3627. Hope Chest. Hope Chest is a program that provides support for women during their pregnancy and after their baby is born. Hope Chest allows mothers and mothers-to-be to earn necessities such as diapers, wipes, clothing, and car seats through a point system. Points are earned by attending prenatal appointments and childbirth classes, and once the baby is born, moms continue to earn points at pediatrician visits until the child turns two. The program office is at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. For more information or to enroll in the program, call 221-1150 to make a monetary donation or donate brand new baby items to Hope Chest, call the March of Dimes office at 416-7310. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 6-8 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 68 Nurse. That's 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 6-8 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Helpline for long-term or disabled care. The Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services has a toll-free number residents can call to obtain information on services for the disabled or for long-term care. For more information, call 855-937-2372. People May Not Know They Have Chronic Inflammation by Marlene Simons in a special to the Washington Post. Most of us think of inflammation as the redness and swelling that follow a wound, infection, or injury, such as an ankle sprain or from overdoing a sport, tennis elbow, for example. This is acute inflammation, a beneficial immune system response that encourages healing and usually disappears once the injury improves. But chronic inflammation is less obvious and often more insidious. Chronic inflammation begins without an apparent cause and doesn't stop. The immune system becomes activated, but the inflammatory response isn't intermittent, as it is during an acute injury or infection. Rather, it stays on all the time at a low level. Experts think this may be the result of an infection that doesn't resolve, an abnormal immune reaction, or such lifestyle factors as obesity, poor sleep, or exposure to environmental toxins. Over time, the condition can, among other things, damage DNA and lead to heart disease, cancer, and other serious disorders. Unlike acute inflammation, which benefits health by promoting healing and recovery, chronic inflammation is characterized by persistent increases in inflammatory proteins all throughout the body, and can damage health and promote several major diseases, says George Slavich, associate professor of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences at UCLA, referring to small proteins called cytokines that the immune system releases at the site of an injury to promote recovery. People typically don't know that they have chronic inflammation until it's too late, he says. Individuals often learn they have chronic inflammation when they develop an autoimmune disease such as Crohn's disease, lupus, or type 1 diabetes, since inflammation is a hallmark of autoimmune disorders. But experts believe chronic inflammation also plays a role in developing heart disease, cancer, kidney disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, neurodegenerative disorders, cognitive decline, and mental health illnesses such as depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and schizophrenia. Scientists are still learning about why chronic inflammation is so dangerous and how it contributes to disease. Meanwhile, they suggest actions people can take to reduce their risk, specifically by changing certain behaviors. Numerous factors appear to raise the risk of chronic inflammation, among them social isolation, psychological stress, disturbed sleep, chronic infections, physical inactivity, poor diet, obesity, and exposure to air pollutants, hazardous waste products, industrial chemicals, and tobacco smoke. Experts believe individuals can reduce their risk by adopting lifestyle changes, including eating a healthy diet, improving sleep, exercising regularly, quitting smoking, and finding ways to decrease stress and exposure to environmental pollutants. Diet is one of the key factors that influences inflammation in the body, Slavich says. Whereas fried foods, red meat, sodas, and white bread and pastries that have refined carbohydrates tend to increase inflammation, fruits, nuts, green leafy vegetables, tomatoes, and olive oil tend to reduce inflammation. Therefore, while diet is not the only factor that can be targeted to improve immune health, it is an important one. Scientists think chronic inflammation causes oxidative stress in the body, which is an imbalance between the production of dangerous free radicals, molecules that harm healthy tissue in the body, and antioxidants, substances that clean up waste products and neutralize them. This can damage DNA as well as proteins and fatty tissue, which in turn accelerates biological aging. Chronic inflammation is involved in not just a few select disorders, but a wide variety of very serious physical and mental health conditions, says Slavich, senior author of a recent paper signed by scientists from 22 institutions, urging greater prevention, early diagnosis and treatment of severe chronic inflammation. Indeed, chronic inflammatory diseases are the most significant cause of death in the world today, with more than 50% of all deaths being attributable to inflammation-related diseases. Researchers still don't understand the exact mechanisms of how certain behaviors influence chronic inflammation, although a few examples are clear. In heart disease, for example, cigarette smoking and air pollution irritate the arteries, which stimulates inflammation. The damage accumulation theory is a possibility, but the reality is that we do not know whether inflammation is causing these health and functional problems, or whether it's an indication that some other process is evolving that undermines health, says Luigi Ferrucci, scientific director of the National Institute on Aging. The evidence is clearer for cardiovascular disease, since it has been demonstrated that blocking inflammation with specific drugs prevents cardiovascular events. For the other outcomes, it's still uncertain. Chronic inflammation can contribute to cognitive decline and mental health disorders by boosting age-related immune system deterioration, known as immunosenescence, and by promoting vascular and brain aging, which in combination degrade neural and cognitive function, experts say. Chronic inflammation can also cause threat sensitivity and hypervigilance, which gives rise to anxiety disorders and PTSD, as well as fatigue and social behavior withdrawal, which are key symptoms of depression, Slavich says. Scientists say more research is needed to identify biomarkers or other substances that suggest the presence of chronic inflammation. There are probably hundreds of these potential diagnostic tools produced by the immune system, but they remain unidentified, Slavich says. The most widely used test measures levels of C-reactive protein, CRP, in the blood. CRP, a substance produced by the liver, rises when chronic inflammation is present, although the standard CRP test is nonspecific. That is, it indicates inflammation, but cannot pinpoint exactly where it is. A second, more sensitive test, hsCRP, suggests a higher risk of heart attack, although it too can be imprecise. Some doctors screen for CRP as part of routine physical exams and also among people at risk for heart disease and autoimmune conditions. Experts think wider screening could identify more patients. This isn't a bad idea, Ferrucci says. Another test, this one more specific to heart disease, screens for myeloperoxidase, or MPO, an enzyme released by white blood cells that kills harmful bacteria in inflamed blood vessels. Increases in MPO can be dangerous, causing further damage to arterial walls, which encourages the formation of clots. These in turn can block blood flow, leading to heart attack and stroke. MPO also reduces the effectiveness of HDL, the good cholesterol, and removes nitric oxide, which is important for the regulation of healthy blood flow. The good news, however, is that people worried about developing chronic inflammation can take affirmative steps to prevent it. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020, Section C. Dear Abby, man with history of cheating is caught on hookup sites. Dear Abby, I just found out my husband of 18 years has been going to hookup websites. He says he was just looking at the pictures, but I don't believe him. I have caught him cheating twice in the past, so it's hard to trust him. My problem is, he knows I can't leave him because I have no job, no skills, no money, nothing. I went right from my parents' house to living with him after our wedding. We have 6 kids and 1 on the way. He will continue to go to these websites because he knows I am stuck. What should I do? Soon to be mother of 7. Dear soon-to-be mother of 7, the first thing you should do is see your doctor and be checked for STDs, If you are well, thank your higher power. If you aren't, get treatment, get well, and talk to a lawyer. Your situation may not be as hopeless as you think. Have you any relatives or friends you can stay with when you leave, change your life, and become self-supporting? It may require job training and time, but please consider it. I doubt your husband will have much time for philandering if he has 6 kids to take care of by himself in addition to his job. I would also doubt that few, if any, women he might be hooking up with would welcome becoming the instant mother of 6. And one more thing. From now on, please use birth control. Dear Abby, I have been divorced for 30 years. During this time, my ex-wife has rarely spoken to me, and in the last 10 years, said not one word to me. There have been many occasions and events at my son's home to celebrate my granddaughter's birthday, etc. My ex and many other people attend, but basically no one speaks to me. I am totally ignored. I have a strong hunch that during the divorce, my ex told people I hit or abused her. Not true. She told my sister something to this effect. I believe it was a ploy to distract from the fact she had been cheating on me. Regardless, this situation is extremely hurtful and unpleasant. Any ideas how to deal with this? Ostracized and paralyzed. Dear O&P, have you tried to initiate a conversation? Have you asked these people why they give you the silent treatment? They're fair questions. After 30 years, it is a little late to correct the mindset your ex may have caused these relatives to have about you. But if at this late date you try to spread the word that she was cheating, it will accomplish nothing, and I don't advise it. P.S. If the silence continues, then I recommend you bring someone, a friend or a date, with you to these gatherings. At least you will have someone to talk to. Dear Abby, I have an acquaintance I see occasionally. He recently told me he is getting married. When I congratulated him, I wanted to ask who the lucky groom is because I have often thought he was gay, but I found out he's marrying a woman. What's the appropriate way to ask this question nowadays, since all of us can marry, I'm happy to say. Pondering in Nevada. Dear Pondering, a subtle way to ask that question would be, congratulations. What's your lucky fiancé's name?
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 22nd. Education Partnership Talks Next Steps by Ruth Campbell. Connecting community entities to continue the momentum toward kindergarten readiness was discussed by those attending the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin meeting Tuesday at the Complex Community Federal Credit Union Training Center. Starting January 1st with the first babies of the new year, Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center distributed power bags to parents. Power stands for Power of Words and Early Reading. The purpose of the bags is to encourage the community to read, speak, and interact with children as frequently as possible starting at birth. Among other items, the bags contain a Centers for Disease Control Milestone Moments book, CDC Age Level Baby book, a Scholastic book, baby toy keys, a baby bib, articles, a magnet, and website information for additional resources. Since the initiative began, there have been 114 babies born at MCH and 98 at ORMC. Dr. Sarah Amiri said that was a slow month for the hospital, which averages 200 deliveries a month, including babies in the neonatal intensive care unit. Kristen Timmons, chief nursing officer at MCH, said between the hospitals there are 450 to 500 births a month. Amiri said nurses give reminders to parents about the bags as they go through their stay. Timmons said parents were asking about the power bags after arriving for their baby's birth. Adrian Vega, executive director of the Education Partnership, said in May, Randy Hamm, executive director of Odessa Arts, is organizing books in the basin at the Marriott. XTO Energy and Marriott underwrote the funding for 20,000 books.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.